The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome to the Fandom Files. We're a Sci-Fi Wire podcast about people who really, really love stuff. I'm Jordan Zachern, the features editor here at Sci-Fi Wire, and I am flying solo on this one. My co-host Emily Gaudette is, she is in town, but she'll be out of town, and we're recording things out of order. And long story short, it's just me tonight with our guest, who I will introduce in just a few moments. We are now, I guess, holiday season starts on Thanksgiving. And so we are 2 weeks away, I think. No, less than. What's today? The 13th? We're getting close to Christmas, is the point I'm making. And so I thought we would talk about toys this time around. You know, it's funny, when I started working at Sci-Fi Wire, I didn't realize how big toys were for adults. And so that's been a very welcome thing. You know, I can now collect toys and buy, annoy my girlfriend with Funko Pops just because it doesn't look weird for adults to buy them, whether it's vinyl stuff or collectibles or all the Godzillas on my desk. So I don't know what I'm getting for the holidays this year. I assume Godzilla will be a part of it, some sort of Godzilla toy. And while my desk at work is now filled with Godzilla stuff and toys, so I don't have space for it there. But, you know, some people go way more extreme than me. And we have a recurring segment here at Sci-Fi Wire called Important Toy News. And people are just buying things left and right for hundreds and thousands of dollars. Collectibles that are just uncannily realistic stuff that I have, almost freaks me out, but the Sideshow collectibles and things like that. So we're going to talk about that in just a few minutes. On a personal note, I wanted to just extend my condolences to the creators of the show, Detroiters, which was too pure for this world. I think 2 seasons it went on Comedy Central, and it was the best show of all time. I don't mean to shade anyone at the Sci-Fi Network or MSNBC or NBC or CNBC or Bravo, E, what else we have? Sprout, I think that's Universal Kids now. I don't want to shade any of my coworkers, but this show, which was indeed produced by Jason Sudeikis, an NBC alum, and made by SNL alums, Sam Richardson and Tim Robinson, greatest show. I really just actually almost demand you, if you're listening to this podcast, I demand you go watch this show on Comedy Central's website, all 20 episodes of this show about two goofy guys who run a really just piss poor ad agency. Are streaming, and it is the happiest show I've ever seen. I'm not a happy person, so the fact that I like it really tells you something. So I really want you to go, whether it's right now, I mean, after this podcast is over, listen to this podcast maybe 2 or 3 times once you've really gotten the message here about toys. We do serious stuff here. Once you've listened to the podcast 2, 3, maybe 4 times, look, I don't know what your Monday or Tuesday is like. Once you listen to this podcast, go online. I don't care about work at this point. You know, it's mid-December, you're almost done, it's almost Christmas. Go online, cc.com, which is comedycentral.com, and watch Detroiters, all 20 episodes with ads. It'll take you about, let's see, half an hour each or so. Terrible at math. It should take you about, 10 hours or so, which is not bad. You can watch a whole series in 10 hours. Then you can go listen to this podcast again, make it 5 or 6 times. So we're going to have a Christmas episode, but that is my early gift to you, the knowledge of the show Detroiters. And you're going to, the problem is you're going to be sad after you realize that it's over. You're going to be excited for season 3 and realize there is none because the universe wants to punish us. Anyways, I want to get back on the jolly note. We're going to talk about toys. So joining us as a guest today, Christian Braun, who is the chair of the Pop Culture Hall of Fame and the Model Car Hall of Fame and the CEO of HobbyDB.com, which is a magical website that is an absolute goldmine for toy collectors and hobbyists. Now, like I said, like we're in the Christmas season, I thought we'd chat about the history of hot holiday gifts, collectibles, and toys, and who better than the guy that helps run the site that collects all collectibles. Christian, thanks for taking the time.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm glad we were able to finally get this done. We connected a while ago, but this feels like the right time. You know, it's the holiday season. Everyone's trying to figure out what toys to buy, so this feels like the right time to talk.
Exactly.
So I know you've been in the industry for a lot of years. What has been your path in and through the toy industry?
So, when we go back, I got my first toy when I was 3 years old, I think. I don't really remember. When I was 7, I did a deal. I got the figures, and my brother got the model cars. He then went on, and he's written about 20 books on model cars. He still collects them. I got my figures. I became a dealer, and as a student, I financed my studies with selling vintage collectibles. And I've always been at it in a way. I run collectible forums in the UK. So I run about 10 collectible forums, you know, for model cars, action figures, model trains, model planes, you name it, we had a forum for it. And about 5 years ago, I started with this new venture. HobbyDB is building a database of every collectible ever made. We think it will eventually, when we get done, have 100 billion entries. And the idea is it's going to be a gigantic resource that will help people to find what exists, find out how much it's worth, be able to add it to your collection, add it to your wish list, and you can also buy and sell. And with the latter, we're paying for the cost of doing all of this.
Wow. That is really, that's a really ambitious idea. I mean, going back to getting your first toys, your first action figures, what were they? What did you have, and what about them hooked you?
So I had all kinds of figures. In fact, there was a British company called Tempo Toys, and they made some sci-fi picture figures and some cowboys and Indians and so on and so forth. And I had about 8,000 of those at my peak when I was 10. I had everything the company made. I was starting writing a book about it, so I've always been at this. But I love the fact that now I cover any type of collectible. Mm-hmm. So to do this, we built an advisory council. And I have some of the most awesome people on there. So I've got an Austrian fellow who has the largest collection of magical sets in the world. Okay. There's a guy who has a Guinness Book record for the largest collection of Monopoly sets. And there are 20,000 Monopoly sets out there that he has. There's a guy with the largest pet collector collection. And we even have a chap who has medieval castles going back to the 16th century, and he can talk about the history of those and how they initially were used to train princes of kings to how to attack other castles, and then they became a toy. So I just love the fact that we cover everything. Yeah. And that I get to speak to people that do crazy stuff. For example, I listened to your last podcast about the Garbage Pail Kids. Mm-hmm. And we're now building an archive with the folks from, there's a website called gpk.com, and there's a chap called Andy Goodman, and he has every card minus 10 or 15, and the GBK guys have everything else. So we're building a GBK archive at the moment that will have about 15,000 objects, and it will be complete. I think we just got to 4,000, and we're just waiting to upload the rest. And it's just a lot of fun.
So where did you have the room, even as a kid, for all those action figures? That is amazing. I'm jealous.
Well, I am German, so you know they were everywhere. I had space, and then the rest was nicely, neatly sorted away with labels on the boxes. It's pretty sad, actually, but there you go.
That's really, really funny. And so, you know, you said you put yourself through school. I know school didn't used to cost as much as it does now, but how did you know? Back then, did they have guides? How did you know what they cost? How did you go around? Did you go around the country?
I'm an old fart now, so I'm 50. And when I did this, there was no internet. There was no data sources. In fact, when I was 16, I was different times. I was hitchhiking across Europe to, you know, areas that were structurally weak, where retail hadn't moved on. They had bicycle shops, and the bicycle shops were selling the toys. And I'd go there and I'd say, what do you have in the basement that you can't sell? And they would show it to me, and I would buy it. You know, and the prices would be 10 years old, and there would be a huge discount, and I would go home. And I would actually ship it with a mail home, and I would go to the next village, and then I would eventually get home myself. And I would look at all the stuff, and I would create a price list. I would actually use a typewriter and type it up. Wow. And then I would send that in the mail to people I knew would buy this stuff, and they would buy it. And the amazing thing, the thing that I thought was funny is, so my list, you know, which had like 5-6 pages, became the Bible, because it was the only thing that exists for this particular kind of stuff. So people were trading using my price list as a guideline. And, you know, my price list was really just based on how much I had of that stuff that I had no idea. But so this were the old days. Now it's all different. You know, now you go to eBay or you go to HobbyDB, and we have already 3 million price points. We're getting 5,000 price points a day. You know, you can find out what stuff is worth. But in the days, you couldn't.
Wow, and people would just take your word for it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I assumed they had the doubts, but there was nothing else out there. So, you know, it's the best thing that existed.
Wow. And so when did you start seeing the toy market really start maturing in a way that, you know, collectibles are so huge now? When did that start turning the corner, you think?
Well, I mean, I think it was always toy market. It's just like anything else, it has moved on a lot. I mean, basically, people collect stuff 20 years later. So, you know, you're a kid, you play with it, so anything is uncool, you get rid of it. And then 20 years later, generally, when you're like in your end 30s or so, you get back to collect. Now, there are some lifers that collect across their life. I'm in that camp. But most people don't. They come back to it later.
Mm.
So there was always that kind of stuff out there. It just wasn't anything of the size as today. And then you add pop culture to it, and that just made a huge difference. You know, LEMA, the Association for the Licensors, estimates the licensing market now to be $250 billion annual. And there's about $175 billion in collectibles that get traded as well. So the market has just exploded. It's about 20 times the size it was 20 years ago.
Well, yeah, because then now the licensing deals, you can graft any pop culture, you know, TV show or movie or whatnot to a toy, to an action figure, to anything else, and it becomes that much bigger.
I think there's just acceptance of that. I mean, like, you know, take Hot Wheels. I mean, those used to be Camaros and Corvettes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the last range they did a really cool, awesome series of Street Fighters. They just came out with a Jack Skellington car. They do Mike Wazowski from Monsters, Inc.
Right.
They did Maleficent. I mean, those are Hot Wheels cars. You know, you just wouldn't expect that.
And if you're a fan of, you know, Monsters, Inc. or Maleficent or whatever it is, you end up wanting to get the Hot Wheels, even if you're not generally collecting cars.
Exactly. I mean, everybody, Funko is obviously the star of doing that. You know, they did the 12 Days of Christmas now, so they do a Pillsbury Doughboy. They do Betty Boop as an elf, Tinky Winky. I don't know who's going to buy that. But, yeah. And they just announced today they're doing Jack and Rose from Titanic. So
wow.
It's just amazing, that kind of stuff, right? And, yeah, I mean, it's clever because the Funko fanatics would go out and buy it. But, of course, you know, you like Jack and Rose. I know a person who doesn't want to be named, but he bought the Golden Girls. You know, they made the Golden Girls, and he bought them. He thought it was fantastic.
Oh, there's no shame in buying the Golden Girls. I'll buy those for my boss especially.
Well, I tease him because of his age, and I can't do them with the same camp. But, you know, it's amazing. You know, they did the painter. I'm not American, so what was his name? Bob Rosens?
Bob Ross?
The painter that did the Funko? Yeah, they paint landscapes.
Oh, yeah, Bob Ross.
Yeah, they couldn't sell enough of that stuff, right? It was just crazy.
That's really funny.
I think they have 15 versions of that guy now.
That's really funny.
And he sells out.
Wow. That's really impressive. And so, you know, it's interesting, like, you know, like you said, people come back to it when they're in, like, their, you know, 30s, I think you mentioned. And, you know, I'm 32, and I've, I guess I maybe have a little money now. I live in New York, so I don't have that much money. But, you know, you have a little bit of a disposable income, and you can start spending it on. I grew up loving Godzilla, right? And so now I can buy things that have Godzilla on them. Whereas, you know, a few years ago, I was putting all my money towards rent. Now I have a little Godzilla money.
Well, I need to tell you, there's a lady here called Dana Kane, and she wrote a book on Godzilla toys. She's down in Denver. I meet her sometimes.
We're
talking about documenting all the Godzilla toys out there. She has all the Japanese stuff. It's amazing. It's so much fun.
There's, you know, there's a cool store in New York called Toy Tokyo that has some of that stuff. And it's interesting.
Yeah,
because,
right.
Yeah. And like, you're looking for toys around the world, not just, American toys. And so something like that, how hard is it to document something that's made, you know, long before they documented the stuff? You know, I imagine Toho wasn't, you know, keeping scrupulous notes about the different versions of Godzilla they were making way back in the day. So how hard is it for you now?
Well, I mean, yeah, there are, we don't know how many entries there are going to be eventually. I mean, giving an example, we've got 50,000 Hot Wheels now. I know that totally left field, but Hard Rock Cafe made 84,000 pins since they started doing those 30 years ago. So the universe is huge. Mm. What we'd like to do is get as much of a subject as possible to cover it. So, for example, we're complete with Funko. We've got 16,000 items with Funko on board. We host the official archive of Kid Robot, so we have 5,000 objects. We've got everything that company has made. That is our preferred working, doing it, because then it's all there, and then we just have to maintain it. And what we do is, so we have an advisory council that has 70 members. They own 11 museums. They've written 180 books. They have 2 Guinness Book records. They're really cool. They're the VIPs of the collectible world. And they help us with what we call taxonomy ontology. How do we document things correct? You know, what's different between a comic and a press dispenser? But then the other thing they do is they give us data, and they give us introductions. And then we have 200 companies who have given us their archives and said, put it up there. Do it for us. Here it is. We've got what we call data donations, where people have said, I have photographed, like yesterday I got a guy who photographed 4,000 promo cars. You know, when you buy a Chrysler or Ford, in the past you were given a model of it in 1/24 scale, and you could take that home and then the car would come later. So he's photographed everything they've ever made, 4,000. He just sent it to me and saying, here, take this, put this up for me, please.
That's a lot of work.
That's kind of how we go about that.
So that's like a lot of work, right? That's a ton of work to have to to put all the stuff online. Who does that grunt work?
So we have 350 volunteers that each own a subject. So, you know, we've got artists that maintain their own personal archives. We've got people that just like a particular brand. We've got somebody who, you know, likes Deadpool and wants to add everything Deadpool related. Mm-hmm. They add stuff straight into the website, like Wikipedia. And then we have other people that said, I mean, I have a guy who's written 9 books on Kinplay toys. Some good stuff in there, actually. Really nice stuff from across Europe. He spent 40 years documenting it. He's written these books, and they're now out of print. And he said, look, Christian, I thought this would take 2 years. It took 40. I'm not going to do it again. But I love what you do, and you can have my data. Here they are. And he sent me the books. So we digitize them, and we'll put them up. I have 6 people in my team that do that all day long.
Right. And these are all people who just love it for the love of toys.
Yeah, I think everybody in our team collects at least one something, mm-hmm. if not more than one thing. And it's fantastic. I mean, even if you don't like toy castles, some of those are exciting. Even if you don't like Disney Kins from the 30s, it's just interesting to see out there. You know, mm-hmm. we just looked at the first licensing character. It's called Yellow Kit, and it was meant to promote the color yellow. It was the first thing that was ever licensed, and I didn't know about that. I thought it was awesome. You know, I mean, I don't want to buy that stuff. It's expensive, but right. I certainly like to look at it and learn about it and think it's cool.
And so, you know, what would you say, like, obviously we talked about Funko, we talked about Kid Robot. You know, what are the biggest toys right now? I mean, we know about the collectibles and market, but, like, what are really hot, like, more recent, newer toys that are really hot now?
Okay, well, so when you say what's the biggest, what does sell most? Well, that's obviously Funko. I mean, Funko is super hot in terms of selling. So it's more a question, you know, what do I think is cool? There's a new series from Kotobukiya that I think is cool, about Grindelwald. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly, because it's a German word after all. I'm German. But I think that's a cool series. I'm looking forward for them to make some of the beasts. Greenlight is coming out with, it just came out with the 1/18 scale A-team car, and I love that. I'm hoping that's why he makes the figures for it, so you can put it together. That would be awesome. So, you know, it depends on which direction you go, but there's just so much awesome stuff coming out every day. We're on the distribution list of about 300 brands that send us stuff that they do every day. And it's just amazing. I browse through that. It goes to our data team, but I browse through it. And it's just so much fun, the stuff that's coming out. It's crazy.
What else? So you mentioned Funko selling really well. Are there any other big things, whether it's a collectible or a new kind of toy that are heating up the market?
But everybody's trying to do a Funko-style form factor, right? It's coming up with something that people can buy. So Jada does the Nano figures, which I kind of like. They're much smaller. They're 99 cents, so mm-hmm. it's really affordable. And they're doing the same, or they're trying to do the same kind of thing. Like loads of different licenses. And, you know, I mean, it's a Funko figure. So a lot of people have no problems because you can staple them quite nicely in the boxes, but if you have 1,000 of them, that's quite a lot of space you need for those.
Yeah,
so
seriously.
I like that. I like that with the Nano. It's really, really small. You can buy a little shelf, you know, a tiny shelf, 12 by 12 inches or so, and you can put 200 figures in there. So I like those. Entertainment Earth came out with, I forgot the name of those. They have the same thing in wood. And those are kind of fun too. And it's kind of funny how difficult it is actually to produce mass market toys out of wood because their rejection rate is so high, but those are fun as well. So I think anything that that could be the next big thing like that, we watch and we see if it works.
And so what do you collect now? I mean, you are so involved in this.
Yeah, so my title is a collector of collector. That's what I put on my business cards. I love the fact that I get to meet some of the most interesting and weirdest people out there.
Yeah.
So on our advisory council, we have a guy who works for the U.S. Army, and his job is to maintain an archive of toy soldiers.
For the Army.
G.I. Joe and stuff like that, right? That's just awesome. I mean, he gets a budget to buy these toy soldiers and put them in the museum. That's what I like. I personally like space toys from the 30s and 50s, so Buck Rogers, Dan Dare, that kind of stuff.
Cool.
And I like it partly because, A, I think it's a fantastic subject, and then, B, you can't get that stuff. It's really hard. I think collecting has changed a lot because, you know, I can go out and pre-order every item by, you know, Mezco. You know, I just go to the Mezco site and I'll pre-buy them and then I have them. To me, that's nice. I like getting them. It's nice to get them in the mail and unpack them and so on and so forth. But I like to hunt.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you collect Dendere toys, they're from the UK. You know, it's a 1950s space series, which is kind of wacky, and there's water pistols and figures and books and various things. It's really hard. You can go to a toy show and you see two things. You may already have one. The other one is not in good condition. It kind of hangs back to the hunt that when I was a kid, that's what you had to do. You didn't know what you would find. You were trying to go to town and go to a toy shop and go to another one. And if you're lucky, you found something. If you're not, you didn't. That's all past the prime now. Now you can go to eBay and you can buy anything that you want.
How do you feel about eBay? How has that impacted collecting?
I think it's changed it. You know, it's different now. And what happens now is, you know, in the past, you would collect what you had to collect because that's what was available locally. I mean, collecting is about hunting, but it's also about finding something sometimes.
Right.
So way back, I mean, I just spoke to this guy and he collects taxi models from South America. And he's in Europe. Now, if he had done that 30 years ago, he would have never, ever found anything. Now he's going eBay, Craigslist, he's on our site, you know, he's on Facebook groups, and he finds something every now and then, and that's kind of fun. So everything has become more specialized, and it's much more about the rarity. You know, it's about chasers, about limited numbers, about special distribution, that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, if you want a Funko item, we've got 16,000 SKUs in our database, so 16,000 items they made, that's including the T-shirts and everything else. And more than half you can buy on HobbyDB now if you wanted to. So that makes collecting, I think, different. You need to find a different angle. And I think that's what a lot of people have done.
Right. They get something. They look for something more and more specific, it seems.
Yeah, you need to specialize, you know. You need to specialize, and you can specialize in whatever takes your fancy. You just couldn't do that in the past. You know,
right.
When you go back 30 years, people were collecting in a different way. I mean, it's almost unheard of. People would say you live in Ohio and you collect, I don't know, action figures. You'd go to an action figure meetup twice a year. Say one would be local and one you'd fly somewhere else. You'd fly to San Francisco and it would be an hotel and there would be 50 rooms or 60 rooms where it was room trading and you would take $2,000, which is a lot of money at the time, and you spend it and you buy all the stuff and you would fill your suitcase and you would fly back. And then there was nothing, and then there was desert. You know, you couldn't get anything until you get to the next show. So obviously that has changed. Right now you can go to eBay or HobbyDB and spend $50,000 and it all arrives 2 days later in the mail.
And so, you know, you mentioned that people are getting more and more specific. What kind of really specific things, what kind of funny specific things have you met people, have you met that people are doing or, you know, use your site to get?
So some people just concentrate on art. I mean, you can now cut the data any way you like. You can collect a certain artist, a certain superhero. There's a guy I met the other day, collects Victorian sand pictures. Those are pictures out of wood that have certain colorful sand in there, and you turn them around and they move. He has six of them. There's one other collector has four of them. That's it. That's all the known sand toys from the Victorian time that exist. So you can be extremely concentrated in something that is very, very niche.
Yeah,
which I find fascinating.
So something like that, or people who get really niche, like what kind of money are they spending on this stuff too? Because, you know, this is not like collecting, baseball cards are expensive too, but you know what I'm saying? It's not collecting cheap stuff.
Yeah, I think as a collector, you kind of find, you somehow have to find a niche that you can afford. You know, there's really no, I mean, I love, for example, 1950s Japanese tin robots.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic. You know, Nomura, Yonezawa, that kind of stuff. But they cost $15,000 to $25,000. So, I'm like, okay, I love that, but maybe I'll collect something else.
Yeah.
Because that's just too much. And, you know, look at Hot Wheels. Mainline Hot Wheels cost still 99 cents, the same as in 1968. And you can collect those, and you can buy one every week, or you can buy 10 every week. So you can do that. I think that's one of the sets that Funko did. You know, Funko, the $10 item, and you can buy one every week. So you know, you spend 40, 50 bucks a month, that's okay. You get four or five items. Because I think collecting is about also, you know, filling in, you know, you need. You want to get something new every now and then. Mm-hmm. So what you collect has to kind of fit somehow your wallet.
What's interesting also is that, like you said, like people will have, you know, the something within their budget, but, you know, they kind of decide, like, how much they want to spend on it. And, like, do you think, like, the market, things are only as valuable as people are willing to pay, or is there, like, a set value to these things?
Well, I mean, everything, you know, it's a collectible, it's a come and go. Right? I mean, like if you go way back, it's a little bit harder to find pop culture examples in the 50s. So let's talk about model kits. You know, when people were doing model kits as a kid, they were later collecting them. That subject, that hobby is kind of dying. The same with model trains. You know, the people that took trains to get somewhere like to collect model trains. They're now old. Nobody buys that stuff. So that those values are on the way down.
Interesting.
While other stuff is way on their way up. So there's stuff that's coming, there's stuff that's going, and there's evergreen stuff. For example, these Yonezawa tin plate robots that I just mentioned, I don't think they will ever lose value. I think they will always be there. If you collect stuff that lost its market, like in the UK, for example, for a while, everybody bought buses. Because buses were used when you were a child to go on vacation. Mm-hmm. That's how you traveled. No kid today travels in a bus, so that market has totally tanked. Now kids collect model planes because you are flying on vacation to Mexico in a plane. So as a kid, you like that. You buy those in the plane or wherever, and then 15 years later, you hunker back to that, and then you buy a model plane. So I know people that have 50,000 model planes in their room.
That's a lot of model planes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you talk about like Funko. Do you think those are going to be super valuable in the future, or is the market inflated?
It's not inflated. It's, you know, it kind of is what it is. Will they keep their values? I mean, Funko has done an amazing job in building that segment out. Mm-hmm. I think anything that's older and that's specialized, so any SDCC version, any New York Comic Con version, I think those will keep their value. Anything that's been limited in the past will keep their value. The newer stuff, I don't know. If you buy something at retail, you're probably fine. If you buy it at the peak of it, you risk that you're going to lose some money on some of the, you know, the last 2 or 3 years. But I mean, so far they have defied gravity. They may continue to do so. They, you know, they're just amazing how they come out with new license after new license after new license, which brings new people in the hobby. And I say, I'm sure that the Titanic Jack and Rose will bring a lot of people in that just wanted to buy those two. And then it's a slippery slope. They buy those two, then they find something else, they buy that, they buy some Disney stuff, they buy something else. And before they know, they got 100 or 200 of these, and they're hooked.
So people are going shopping for the holidays this year. You know, what would you recommend if you were, I guess, if you were a kid or if you were buying for a kid, what would you recommend being, not in just terms of value, but the coolest things that, you know, like younger people might want?
For kids?
Yeah, for kids.
I didn't know you buy toys for kids. sorry, joking here. I got two, and my girl is she's 9. I think she has 100 LOLs. So that's what she wants. And my son is very easy. He's big into Lego. He's very stable with them. And I would get him a Lego set. Particularly some of the good stuff that they do. There's some Batman Lego sets that are fantastic that I enjoy building with them too. Mm-hmm. So it depends on what. I mean, if you ask me for value preservation, that would be a very different question too. If you ask me about, and if it's for a collector, I'd buy something vintage. Mm-hmm. I go vintage all day.
Got it.
If it's just for fun, well, that's different. Yeah, and if it's something for a grown up, I love some of the new hot toys. I like the Bakia. Inside Show is great. There's so much stuff coming out there that it's just amazing. The only thing is it needs a lot of space.
Seriously, you're dealing with a lot of people who have a lot of space in their homes, it seems. If I buy the occasional Funko, the occasional action figure, do I keep them in the box or do I take them out?
Well, I mean, the nice thing about Funko is you can take them out and put them back in again if you're careful. Mm-hmm. If it's standard stuff, I wouldn't worry too much about it. I mean, if we speak about Funko, it's actually much more important to buy the right stuff. You go to Target, and the stuff in Target is meant to be new, but it not always is. Mm. It's much more important to spend the time there and then make sure that your package doesn't have any dings, because that's what the Funko collectors hate. Versus carefully opening and taking the item out and putting it carefully back in again. So okay. I'd say concentrate on that. Make sure whatever you buy doesn't have any dings. I mean, we see that all the time where people buy something. They said, I just bought that at Walmart. It's new. It's like, no, it's not. Because, you know, it's gone from Funko's production facility somewhere to the Funko's warehouse, from there to Target, and the Target guy threw it on the shelf, someone else takes it, puts it back, another person takes it and puts it back. So that's where you need to spend your time. I would take the stuff out of it. You know, we really talk, when you talk about Hot Wheels, I mentioned earlier, they do some really nice Batman stuff too. That's different because, you know, that's on the cart. That's where you really have to make a call. Those are $1 items, I would just buy two of them, and then I would open one and put the other one on the wall. If you talk action figures, that's a harder call. You know, I'm kind of an opening guy because I want to experience the stuff. But sure. Obviously, that costs you money. That costs you value.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, how you open one of them versus the other one that's not opened. What's the difference in value? Does it just really crater the value?
So let's take. I think probably the most extreme example I know is some early Star Wars figures. In the UK, they made these Star Wars figures, and they had a token on the package. And if you cut that token off and you send three of them or four of them in, you got a special figure.
Okay.
So, you know, every kid would do that. Every kid would just cut those off. So that figure, if you got that figure on card, complete, without the cutout, you know, some of them are $5,000, $6,000, $10,000. With the cutout, $500. Without the card, $5,000.
Damn.
If you think about it, an early Kenner model, you know, there are probably 300,000 people that want that figure. Most of, not all of them, are quite happy to have it loose, put it on the shelf, be done with it. You know, some people want. Quite a lot of people want it on card. And then some people want it unpunched. You know, when the punch is still in, it's never been in the store. It's never been on the rack. Unpunched, $10,000. Punched, $1,000. Loose, $5. And the only reason why that thing is worth $5, you know, Kenner made 3 million of them. They are still almost all out there. The only reason why that's worth $5 is it's what I call the I'm not getting out of bed fee. Yeah, I'm not going to pack this and send it to you unless I get at least $5. So that's always going to stay at that value. It will never go up. It will never go down because that's the cost of doing business.
Got it.
That $10,000 item, that will eventually be $20,000. And the $1,000, they'll probably stay where they are. So if you do want to invest in toys, buy the decibel post degree you can.
Mm. What's on your list? What are you going to buy? Are you going to ask for yourself for anything for Christmas this year?
Well, the nice thing is we get constantly new stuff into the office. Mm. And every second day, I am with somebody and looking at that collection. I'm old-fashioned in that way. I sometimes go to a toy fair and then take some money and buy the best thing I find there. I also like to browse around. We run a marketplace on HobbyDB, so I browse around there and see what we have. I don't really have a fixed shopping list.
Mm-hmm.
I dabble. I have a lot of Funko products. I got some Kid Robot stuff. They're local. Kid Robot was created in Boulder, where we're based. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the office is down the road. So I've got quite a lot of stuff from them, from various artists I like. I got some statues, and then I have tons of vintage stuff.
I live in a one-bedroom apartment, so I'm very jealous of the amount of cool stuff you have.
You should see what some of the people are that we deal with. I'm amazed by some of the collections that are out there.
What's the biggest collection you've seen? Or what are the coolest ones you've seen?
There's a guy in upstate New York who has 500,000 model cars. There's a chap in Belgium. He doesn't want to be mentioned. And he has, I don't know, about 20,000 square foot full of tinplate toys from the 30s, 40s, and 50s. Most valuable collection I've ever seen. It's just unbelievable what people gather over a long period of time.
Yeah, and do you find most people end up like handing this stuff down, or do they eventually sell it?
That's a tricky question. I mean, like, you know, most collectors historically have been male. Men marry women that are 5 years younger than an average, and they die 7 years earlier. I know it's horrible. It's horrible to be a man, but that's unfortunately our fate. So we'll, you know, basically, we'll buy that stuff, and the ladies used to. That's different. You know, Funko, I think, and other companies, action figures is much more mixed. But in the past, guys would buy collectibles and women would buy shoes and handbags. And then the lady wouldn't tell the husband what she spent on her stuff because that just doesn't go down very well. And then he wouldn't say, I just bought this comic and I paid $800 for it, because that wouldn't be a good discussion to have either. So both don't really know how much the other party spent. Now, fast forward until it's time to either get money because you need to, or you're downsizing, or you're not around anymore. It's kind of hard. So you want to build a plan when you do a collection. You want to say, okay, fine. If I need money, how do I deal with this?
Mm-hmm.
How do I monetize this? Which is often the most valuable possession in the household. You know, and if you own a house, okay, that's probably the most valuable, but you need that. And the second most valuable thing is the collection. But collections are hard to sell. If you have actually 2,000 action figures, well, the best way is to sell them all individually. But that's a lot of work. If you need money tomorrow because you have an operation and you have 2,000 items, you need to photograph them, describe them, list them, and so on and so forth, that's a lot of work. So one of the things that we've done is we build our collection management so you can document what you own when it's actually fun. When you buy a new object, you know, you get the package, you unwrap it, you look at it, you enjoy that. That is the best moment. I call it the honeymoon period for that item, because then it goes on the shelf where the other 2,000 items are. So that is the moment where you want to document it, because it's actually fun and you can share it on social media and so on and so forth. So that's the time you should photograph it, describe it, and put it in your collection, which you can do on HobbyDB. And when it ever comes time to sell, well, now you don't have to photograph 2,000 objects and describe them and look at them. You can just say sell, 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 and they all go up for sale. So you save yourself days of work. So that's what I would do. I'd manage my collection like I would manage any other assets. You know, you have shares, you can sell those. Collectibles are like that in a way. They have value, they go up and down, and if you need to monetize them, you want to be able to do that fast. And you can only do that if you've already documented.
Well, that's a very good and reasonable promotion and endorsement of HobbyDB, HobbyDB.com, which you are the CEO of.
Thank you.
Great. Well, listen, Thank you so much. Enjoy the many, many, many toys you are getting that I am very jealous of. Keep up the awesome work. And if people want to come visit the site, is there anything they should they can register? Is it people friendly? How does it work?
Yeah, you can just come to HobbyDB. You can use all of it. You don't even have to register. It's all free. If you want to manage your collection, obviously, then you need to register. But it's fun. You know, it just takes 20 seconds. Do that. And then manage your collection, put in your wish list. I find that also particularly powerful. You know, there's we cover any variation of an item. We have a model that has 196 variations. Huh. And if you want a rare one of that, you know, you can say, I want that. Let me know when that comes up. You get an email. You can go in and you can buy it. I think that's quite powerful too.
In fact, I'm
looking forward to see your Godzilla collection on there.
I need to start getting some work. I'm going to take some photos of the ones I have at my desk, and I'm going to, you know, this is a good excuse for me to really get the collection going. It's a good reason, and I have very valid, and I'm sure my girlfriend will understand and agree.
Sounds good. And I'll send you a link to that book that Dana wrote about Godzilla. If you don't have it yet, it's an awesome addition to your collection.
Oh, yes. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks so much for taking the time, Christian.
You're very welcome.
All right, so that was Christian Braun of HobbyDB.com. Go to a site and start your collection and spend all the money you have on toys because, look, we're all going to be dead someday, so why not buy fun stuff? And, look, we're all going to be dead someday, so why not give us a good review on iTunes? Make someone else happy for once. Give us 5 stars. Say nice things. It is the holiday season, and I'm not going to say it's the only thing I'm going to be spending my Christmas doing, but I will be refreshing iTunes over and over again, hoping somebody, anybody, gave us a nice review. So please, go to iTunes and give us 5 stars. Leave a nice review. Tis the season. It'll be your good deed. Then you can go and eat whatever holiday food you like to eat and shove your face and filled with cake. That's fine with me. I don't care. Just give us 5 stars. I'm very desperate here. Anyways, we'll be back next week with a special Christmas episode. Have a good week, everybody.